My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Jalakuma.
Hi, Jalakuma. It's going to be hard for me not to say Jalakuma. and you're listening to this bonus level about kind of specifically Danganronpa V3. But can you know, maybe it might widen out a little bit there. Jala, do you mind if I shorten it to Jala?
That's fine. That's
okay.
Fine.
Okay.
All my friends do.
Yeah. Jala, you just played this, and I need to make sure it gets out here right away. I didn't tell you to play this.
No, you didn't. So my long history of Danganronpa in the last couple of years, I started by playing the first one because you played it and you recommended it. Mm-hmm. That was your fault.
No, then, I own that. I never said I didn't.
Yes, yes. And then I got so mad at that game, I think it was 2017 that I actually played it. I got so mad that was the first time that I ever decided that I needed to throw my gaming device. I wanted to throw my Vita at the end of that game because I was so mad, because the ending of that game, it's not that it has like this whole apocalyptic thing going on. I was mad because it was just so full of shonen bullshit. Yeah. Just like the power of humanity and all this. And I was like, I can't even with this game. Like, no.
Yeah.
That plus, like, you know, it is very, very heavy on the character archetypes. And I was really expecting, with all the praise, that they were going to take those archetypes and then flip them on their head. But that's not what happens. They actually lean into those archetypes really heavily throughout the entire thing. That's not the thing that they flip you on. They flip you on other stuff instead. But then they ended up circling back around and making it anime typical story stuff. Anyway, with the power of humanity crap. And I'm like, no!
It also ended very, very abruptly as well.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, yes. So that was my intense anger at that game. And that was what started the entire, table flipping thing.
Let me present the version, the version of events as I remember them. I thought it was Virtue's Last Reward that was table flipping, and I thought Danganronpa was Vita throwing.
Well, I think I
don't mean to correct you because you're the person who originated these.
I may be misremembering, but I think I might have altered. I know I definitely said I was going to throw my Vita, but I don't know. I might have also said I was so mad I was going to flip a table or throw my Vita or whatever, you know, but I don't know. I may be wrong. You may be correct on that. It may be that I flipped tables about Virtue's Last Reward, but like the intense violent hatred, that was definitely Danganronpa that started that.
For sure. And like games that are in like this nexus, the Danganronpa and Zero Escape, like that was the genesis of like the Jala meme, at least on the level of, you know, flipping tables. And people like it when you open up on a game, because I think just among all of us, like, I'm pretty likely to call something kind of some bullshit. Everybody else is pretty mild in their criticisms of things when they get to it, and you do not hold back. And people like that quite a bit.
Well, I think the thing that made me lose my mind absolutely the worst ever was Corpse Party Blood Drive. But yes. Danganronpa 2 was pretty close. Like, I if it weren't for the fact that I had some modicum of faith that this was, you know, it was gonna get a little bit better, and then it started to finally turn, like, if it hadn't turned about halfway through in Danganronpa 2, I probably would have just like completely lost it.
It's a rough beginning. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very, very rough beginning, but it does even out. The problem with the reason why Corpse Party Blood Drive was the nightmare it was for me is because it just got worse. It didn't get any better. There was no redemption for it at all.
It got worse in a way that like the other entries in the series didn't make you feel like they had it in them to make it that bad in that particular way.
Yeah, exactly. And the interesting thing is going to be, will I eventually play Dead Patient, Corpse 42 Dead Patient, which is out in the universe somewhere and translated into English.
Yeah, so it's only on PC. I'm waiting for it to come out on Switch.
Yeah. So anyway, that's a thing. That might be another thing in the future. We will see what happens with that. But Danganronpa 2, I was mad at the entire beginning of that game, and like every single episode was me just railing about that game and being mad about the characters, about the situation. I mean, that is the one that had Mikan, that one girl who just kept on falling over and like flashing her skirt at everybody, yeah, and just like the, all this juvenile
the
humor.
The literal just, cheesecake pictures or cheesecake CGs. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. The thing about the series overall that just continually just gets under my skin worse than anything is the fact that it gets into these really, really basic teen humor, like, you know, ha ha ha, look at this, you know, I'm going to flash my boobies at you, mm-hmm. or whatever. And then after like a bunch of that, right after that, just drops in some really interesting philosophical theming. Mm-hmm. It's like, wait a minute, it's a complete roller coaster ride going up and down between just like these low horrible crappy parts, and then just getting up to a point where it's like, oh, this actually is got some good writing in it, and then mm-hmm. phew, there you go down the hill again into yeah. another piece of trash that's yeah
like
on
a
fire.
like a a regression to like tropey kind of stuff, like something that we talked about when you really reacted poorly to the end of the first one, is like you have a bigger history with anime than me, you generally watch more of it and like do not have like the knee-jerk reaction that I tend to. However, because of your exposure, because of my relative lack of exposure, I haven't developed the antibodies and like kind of grown the awareness to understand when something is just a basic ass trope. And so to me, a lot of the stuff, it feels like it's a subversion just because it is so overpronounced, let's say. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like mm-hmm. everything is extreme. And to me, that felt like enough. But to somebody who like knows this stuff, it might be like, oh yeah, this is boring because they're literally just hanging out in wagon ruts. Right.
Yeah, and that was something that I discovered when I played the first one, because as much as I actually really enjoyed most of the first game, mm-hmm. I really enjoyed. It was kind of a little bit slow to start, but then it kind of stayed at a pretty good pace for most of it until the ending when I just got mad. But
even the big twist in that, like when you're mm-hmm. about to, I mean, so let's put this here, just spoilers for the series generally, yeah. Like we're going to talk about everything, you know. We're going to talk about everything. We're going to use names that if you haven't played this, they're not going to mean anything to you. So maybe you won't remember it, but we're going to talk broadly. Like when it seems like you're about to be executed in Danganronpa 1 and you save yourself and survive and come back to do a trial for the real killer, like that, those particular reveals are incredibly good. It's the stuff that's after that that becomes the power of hope, literally.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was just... It made me so mad. And not only that, but I also, I cannot abide Junko as a villain. Mm. I hate Junko with a passion. Like her, when she was in the first game and she was acting or whatever, like one of the normal characters was, I wouldn't call her tolerable. I didn't tolerate that many characters, but she was less grating. But when she's in her ultimate despair mode or whatever, mm-hmm. As the overarching villain of all of these games, then it's just like she's just bouncing back and forth really quickly between, you know, one extreme and another, and acting like one character and then acting like another one. And it's mm-hmm. just like, who gave this child too much sugar? They should be shot. I mean,
and that's even just, in the Japanese dub, which is generally a little bit yes. more subdued. Yeah.
Oh no, it is. I have not played any of the English dubs of these, and mm-hmm. I looked for a link so I could post Monokuma's laugh when I posted an image of myself as Jalakuma with a mask that an anonymous listener mailed to me.
Who may or may not have been the same. Yeah, it's a real cool, like, Monokuma, like, mask. Hanky Veil kind of thing, right?
It's like one of those masks that people wear in Japan when they have a cough or something, so that way they don't get germs everywhere.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's one of those sanitary mask type things, but mm-hmm. it's Monokuma's face. Yeah. And then they also, like, a while back, sometime last month, I got a Monokuma plushie of just, like, him laughing. And it's, like, the official thing from Japan, so somebody really put in some bucks into this let's troll Jala by sending her Monokuma stuff, but little did they know I actually like Monokuma.
Yeah. And so let's troll this person by sending her nice things.
So I don't know if they actually meant to troll me or not, because they have not come forward. Oh, and that turned into a thing too, because on the Slack, I posted an image of myself with the, you know, the plushie and then with the mask on. And then listener Mai was like, you know, whoever turned you in, you cannot turn into Jalakuma, or I'm going to kill you. And I was like, well, you can thank the anonymous listener. They're the mastermind. And then she's like, my blade is ready. And I was like, she doesn't even know that she's turning into the game. She doesn't even know. Because there's always a character that's really strong that is trying to kill the mastermind if only they could find them. Uh-huh. And I had already said in the chat room right before that everybody was, all the listeners were going to be forced into a killing game because I'm Jalakuma. So it was like, wow, she doesn't even know. She's turning into the game.
Or she knows exactly what she's done, and she's the person who sent you the stuff.
Yeah, it could be. It could be. It could be if Mai is the real killer. So, the real mastermind here. But wouldn't that be a twist? Oh, boy. But, yeah, so anyway, with these games, I noticed really off the bat that you definitely... I was sitting there getting mad about stuff, and I'm like, but that's just the same as all these other characters that I, and you're like, what, really? And mm-hmm. I'm like, yes, that's like everything. So it's just because I have this dark history as an otaku that, you know, I have this strong response when I'm playing this game, or, you know, especially at that time I did. I kind of, once I figured out that, okay, this game likes to lean into its tropes and, you know, that's not really going to be the thing, you know, like that's going to just be part and parcel of it, but it's not going to be the thing that is being turned on its head or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's still kind of been the bane of my existence, because I think the thing I disliked most out of Danganronpa 3 is just... how, like, because they seem to just be turning up the volume on from 1 to 2 to 2 to 3 on how intolerable these characters are.
It's a real problem.
Yeah, like these characters, I could not tolerate pretty much anybody when they first started out, and like eventually I ended up liking a few of them, but only after they were like quieted down, after several people have died and they were sobered up by, oh, you know, like being in a killing game in a school with a bunch of whatever. Yeah. So
I was reading a synopsis and I was like, okay, I made myself a little folder. I made myself a dossier of all these characters, because you played this here recently. I played this back closer to the time at the time it came out. And I was looking at these characters and I was like, wait a minute, which ones were on my side? It could be because I just looking at this person, I remember, hey, that unpleasant moment. Here's this unpleasant moment with this person. Like, that person's obviously a villain. And, like, even the ones, so Kaede and Shuichi, they're both fine. Anodyne, you know, just they're meant to be that. They're meant to be player surrogates. And, like, the people who are on your side are, like, Kaito and Maki. And even as like the most friendly, like regular people, they're also just off the wall and like really confrontational and jerks.
Yeah. Like Maki, I did not like her until like maybe the very end of the game.
Well, when she reveals because, what her actual game is.
because she is the ultimate child caregiver originally, allegedly. And she's super cold and super, just like super, super tsundere. I'm not going to talk to anybody. I hate everybody, whatever. Yeah, yeah. And then she turns out to be the ultimate assassin, actually. And okay, well, that's a thing. Mm-hmm. And then like, the only time I actually ended up liking her is once she and Kaito ended up like interacting and then kind of becoming a romantic thing out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's so sad too, because I'm like, wow, it's, she only likes him really because like, that's the only person who's actually been nice to her of the, you know, gender that she is interested in.
Yes.
And I'm like, wow, that's wow. Yeah. I mean, like he paid attention to her and now she's got a romance with him. Oh boy. Wow. Because I can see it. I've had that situation where people have, you know, fallen in love with me just because I talk to them. Wow. Oh boy. So like that brought up some really weird personal stuff for me when I was going through, and I'm just like, okay, well, that sure is a thing.
Yeah.
But I mean, even Kaito is, he starts off like this zany weirdo astronaut guy who is just like,
well, he's never been in space.
Yeah, he's never been in space, but he's like the luminary of the stars and all this other stuff. But then he drops, when you talk to him, he drops all this stuff that he has to learn in order to be the ultimate astronaut. So he's got to learn biology and survival skills and, you know, all these other types of, you know, physics and chemistry and whatever. And he's got to be physically fit. So he should be like super baller, right? But then everybody just they make a show of everybody calling him stupid. Right. Everybody calling him stupid for like two chapters straight. I mean,
he does act like a real meathead a lot of the time.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, you know, but at the same time, like, you know, he ends up being likable in the end. But I mean, boy, is there a journey even for the ones that they are trying to make you like, you know, there are some characters like the inventor Miu who just like I would have maybe liked to have liked her, but they never made her likable.
I mean, like they were coding her as like as somebody who was supposed to be like, oh, she's telling the truth, so she's good. But like, I found her to be in a game that has had a lot of really crass, or a series that has had a lot of really really crass characters. Like, her crassness or blueness actually like rubbed me the wrong way a lot.
Yeah, me too. And it's like, for me, I'm pretty blunt and to the point. So yeah. I was like, well, she's a strong-willed character who's just like, because she's also sexual. I mean, like, she, you know, wears spikes and like looks like bondage straps stuff on her.
But then, her outfit is totally BDSM.
Yeah, and then, like, she also, at one point, ends up getting away, like, escaping from Gonta, who's coming after her to, like, you know, track everybody down to have this, like, motive video watching party. Mm-hmm. She stops him by being an exhibitionist and flashing him. Mm-hmm. and he's like, I'm the ultimate gentleman. Or, and he's not actually, he's the ultimate entomologist, but he thinks of himself as a gentleman. And so he's like, I can't see this. And he runs away. And that's how she gets away, is by being an exhibitionist. Like, and she was just like, I show guys my panties all the time. And what about it? You know?
Yeah.
And
like, I was like, that well, could be a good comedy beat.
Empowerment. That could be a good comedy beat, but also like a women empowerment. Like, I really wanted to like her, but then every time she opened her mouth and said literally anything, it was trash. Yeah. It was just, and it wasn't just trash. I mean, it was just like horrible. Yeah.
Hateful kind of stuff that eventually goes on. Like, she's fucking ruthless with a lot of people in a way that I'm supposed to care if you die.
Yeah. And it's like that failed miserably. I mean, you know, pretty much in a lot of the situations, that was my biggest dilemma is like, I don't like how much that I was on the level talking about this game. Did I say, I don't like this character. Mm-hmm. I don't like any of the characters. I don't like anyone. I still don't like anyone. Like, the entire time I was doing that until like maybe chapter 5 is when I started kind of liking people.
Yeah.
And then that's like almost the end of the game, 'cause it's 6 chapters long.
Yeah.
And you know, the 6th chapter is just basically a trash fire of like, it changes up the mechanics and everything and is intentionally hateful and just because of like the point that it's trying to make with its ending. So
it's like this is not like a series wide thing where the entire cast is unlikable. You know, my favorite cast is, you know, Danganronpa 1. That is not a controversial thing, but like even there, like, you had people who were like coded as being just like generally good. You had Aoi, you had Asahina, you know, the ultimate swimmer.
Yeah.
You know, like, you had Sakura the martial artist, right? Like, cool, good Chihiro, come on. Like, so good.
Yeah.
And even like the ones that were gonna be evil, like, ended up being solid in the end. There's nobody here that like feels like they're going to be solid until right before they're about to go.
And I just have to say, just as a side note, like with the original Danganronpa, I was so, you know, one true pairing, Sakura and Aoi, and I was just like, they need to live, they need to be together. Yeah. And then like, it was so terrible. But anyway,
Sakura died,
and that's about the only place in this series that I actually got really behind, like, you know, a one true, I was totally gonna ship them, you know, like, and I was just real about it. I was like, I love these characters and I love them together. Like, I didn't really care about them individually, but when they put them together, they were great. And I was like, wow, I this changed these characters for me, you know? Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, like, I guess they were trying to do that with Maki and Kaito in this one, and it failed real bad. No, like, I just was like, eh.
No chemistry. And then like they like did a self-aware like twisted version of that with Miu and Kibo.
Yeah, but that was like, because Miu has to be so intolerant, she's basically raping the robot.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that sure is a thing. I mean, like, he seems kind of into it, so I'm not really sure if it's rape. But, you know, Shuichi's like, I'm just going to close the door and pretend I didn't see anything.
Yeah, goodbye. It's questionable just because Kibo is, like, coded as a little kid.
Yeah. So, boy, that was a thing. Oh, and by the way, Kibo's name entertains me because at the very end of the game, he is like the embodiment of hope, pretty literally. Like, he is just like, he is in the last class trial, and his answer for everything is hope or despair. But, you know, he's supposed to be the embodiment of hope. Well, his name, Kibo, means hope.
Oh.
So, I mean, cool. Okay. Well, on the nose much, you know? So, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, and you know what's funny is that at the end of this game, the only people who live are Shioichi, Maki, and then Himiko. And I was like, boy, why is Himiko still alive?
Yeah, she seems like somebody who would go pretty early. She seems unnecessary.
Like, I know that's kind of ruthless for you to say, but really, like, why is she still alive at the end of this? Like, they just didn't know what to do with her, I guess. I mean, like, there's no purpose in her even being alive anymore. Like,
I found myself really wanting to like Himiko, so the ultimate magician who prefers to be called a mage because, you know, she insists it's not tricks. It's, you know, it's magic. Tricks are things whores do for money, Michael. you know, but her whole deal is that she's like just extremely phlegmatic, like kind of literally she always has a head cold and she's not paying attention to anything. Like, she's barely present for any of the proceedings.
Exactly. Yeah. And then usually if she is, it's just, she just reminds me of, you know, a little kid who is up past their bedtime and just like whining because that's about how she sounds.
Yeah.
So, you know, and so that's the thing. Well, so the way that they turn everything around in this game, not just turns over this game, but also turns over the entire series. But before we talk about that, I kind of just want to brush on in Danganronpa 2 how that one ended.
Yes.
So the first one ended with, you know, the apocalypse. Everything is all destroyed because the ultimate despair was unleashed on the world by a 16-year-old girl that for some reason everybody was influenced by, which I don't buy whatsoever. And I was so mad.
She basically founded teen emo ISIS. And that caused a complete destabilization of the world order.
Yes. And that just is no, like I can suspend my disbelief in a lot of ways. I can suspend my disbelief pretty far going into this. I'm good. You know, everybody at Hope's Peak Academy is in this school doing a killing game and all this. Other, I can suspend disbelief for all of that, but that was like my limit.
Yeah.
They reached my limit. And I was just like, I can't even with this.
And it's notable that even in the first game, there was a reality TV element to this. There was, you know, like that they were being filmed and broadcasted. There were cameras all over the place.
Yes. So in the second game, you know, the way that it ends up is that all of the people were computer simulations or something that were.
It was like the Animus from Assassin's Creed. Like, each of the individual students were members of Teen Emo ISIS of the Ultimate Despair, who had done terrible things. And the organization founded by the people who survived the first game kind of basically got a hold of these people, put them into this simulation in order to try and redeem them. But then Junko got into the simulation and started setting up a killing game.
Yeah, so then you've got like a self-sacrificing android for no reason, which that made me mad. That made me so mad. But the self-sacrificing whatever, that pissed me off. You know, Chiaki, and because then they always try to make you really like them, and I'm just like, you're trying to push it too hard. But all of that. And then it just felt like such a, it's like all of a sudden, suddenly there's like Makoto again out of nowhere. Like, okay, sure.
I was fine with that. They were all
like men in black popping up out of nowhere in uniforms. And it was just like, well, that sure is an ending of a game. But I kind of liked it. I kind of liked that they did actually incorporate it and bring it back around, even though it felt so disjointed originally, for like the rest of the game, you know.
I could care less about Makoto, but I was really happy to see more Byakuya. Byakuya is a good character.
Yeah. So, but So that ending, I actually kind of liked. I liked a lot of elements of. I didn't like that it ended with this whole power friendship. Chiaki is going to use the last of her strength, even though she was just obliterated. Somehow she's come back just to do this one thing, to help them defeat Junko or whatever. And then everybody lives happily ever after in their simulation. And that's okay. That sure is an ending. You know, that was still more satisfactory than the first one's ending. I was still okay with that more than like the way that Junko, like if we're already going to go ahead and just go there and say that emo ISIS has already taken over and done all this stuff, you know, we're past the part that really makes me mad and we're just going to roll with it. Then, okay, this is a satisfactory ending for this game. Now in this game, in V3, boy, this is a whole different.
We kind of just have to start from the end, and I mean, my suggestion would be that, and to say that in the world of Danganronpa V3 Killing Harmony, Danganronpa 1 and 2 exist, and they started such a craze that the killing game started happening in real life.
And V3, it is not the third game, it is the 53rd game. This is the 53rd Danganronpa that has occurred because people were so excited about the killing game, and the real culprit is you, player. You're the one forcing everybody to do all this because you're the one who keeps buying this damn game. So you're the one. And so that was actually really cool. I really dug that. And that was their big turn on the head. And the person who is the culprit is allegedly Junko, but what it is the ultimate cosplayer girl who cosplays as Junko.
Yes. So, and she is like played completely innocuously throughout the entire game, Samugi. Like the game is doing as much as it can to make you believe that Kokichi, the ultimate dear leader, is behind everything, which feels a little bit too obvious. But yeah, it's Samugi cosplaying. She's not the mastermind, though. She is like the agent on the inside working for Team Danganronpa, which is the fictional developer of the fictional like a group of producers who put on this real life reality television show where they take teens and wipe their memories and make them kill each other.
So at the end of the game, they also reveal that all of the people who were in the game, all the characters that were in this, Shuichi, Kaede, Angie, Gonda, all of them were fans of the show as a reality TV show that was out in the world, and they applied to become participants in the killing game. And you can see part of their interview audition videos where they're talking about, oh, I'll be the best killer and I'll do this other stuff. And maybe I could be the ultimate, whatever the heck. And that's why, like, even though, you know, even though when I was playing this game, I was like, the ultimate astronaut hasn't even gone to space. That's bullshit.
That's like, another thing that didn't feel right.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, well, actually, that makes sense because he wasn't actually an ultimate astronaut. He was a fan of the reality TV show who had his memories wiped and was told that he's the ultimate astronaut, but he really wasn't. He was just some guy, just, you know.
Everybody is just a really shitty version of their ultimate. You know, and even like, you know, Kirumi, the ultimate maid, like, she's supposed to be, you know, like, yes, she's the ultimate maid. But no, she's like a shadow prime minister. Like even people's stated expertise is not what their like fictive expertise is that was like loaded into them in a reverse Men in Black kind of neuralizer thing.
Which, by the way, that just made me so mad when she was like the prime minister. And I was like, no, no. I was just so pissed. But there were different times that I was very mad at this game. And that was one of those times that I was just like, oh, my eyes are bleeding right now. I'm mad. So so that's the interesting twist at the end of this game. It does this kind of fourth wall breaking thing, but it's kind of funny because when I was playing the ending, at first I was like, oh, whoa, are they actually like super fourth wall breaking all the way to me, the player in the real world, to where it acknowledges that it is also like 100% fictional, but it doesn't. It says that they are fictional characters, but they are real people. It kind of does this little, no, this is still, you know, the game world of V3 is a real world.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, all of that. So it kind of backs a little bit away from that. I kind of would have almost liked it better if they had actually said, no, they realize that they are actually figments of somebody's imagination. Yeah. That's not even in their universe. That would have been even, I think, even cooler. But mm-hmm. that's like a fiddly bit. That's like a little personal preference. I don't think it's yeah. that it just, big of a...
They're through so many different layers of like metafiction, and I'm not saying that as like a yeah. meme kind of thing. Like, just they're just above so many different like tiers of artifice happening. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So yeah, another thing that they did that I thought was neat was when the game starts, you start out as Kaede, the ultimate pianist.
Yeah,
and then. She's an unreliable narrator. So you think, you know, somebody's got to be the one who killed everybody, you know, or killed Rantaro in the first chapter. And then during the investigation, you find out, no, your unreliable narrator, Kaede, hid something from you, the player. Mm-hmm. And actually, she's the one who killed.
I was a little bit dissatisfied with the cheat. Ultimately, it's fine. It felt like a weird break of the rules of the trial system. The weird separation between me and Kaede felt unsatisfying. Yeah. That was ultimately overridden by like the satisfaction of like, oh, I thought I was playing as this person the whole game. Now it's a complete twist em up.
I was mildly mad, though, that it was like, and now I'm a boy again. Mm. I was hoping it was going to be a girl. Rats. Yeah. But that's okay. So, anyway, so that was a thing. Mm-hmm. But actually, she wasn't the killer, so she ended up being killed unnecessarily because it was Tsumugi all along. Mm-hmm. Rats.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
But, and it's actually, I kind of found it entertaining that in the first chapter, Kaede and Shuichi actually do come across the layer of the mastermind, and it really is the layer of the mastermind, mm-hmm. but like it's just left dormant from the first chapter till the very end of the damn game, when suddenly you see that there's a Monokuma making machine in there, mm-hmm. and all this other stuff, and that's like really the layer, but it was through the girl's bathroom. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, all right. Huh. So yeah, that was not the mastermind we were looking for at the right time. Yeah. Not the right mastermind, not the right time.
Well, and then, too, it kind of, in that way, makes sense that you switch from being a girl character to a boy character who does mm-hmm. not go into the female's bathroom at that point.
Yes.
So, because then you would not have a reason to have possibly stumbled across that. Yeah. So, that was the thing.
I want to hear your reaction, speaking of, like new things that they have done, your reaction to the Mono Kids.
If
you were going to get there later, that's fine, but...
Oh no! I'm trying to gather my thoughts. That was a big sigh and big looking off in a direction, and my spine tightening and my jaw clenching.
It's a and lot.
That's kind of.
You spend so much time like just watching them bicker, and it's like, I don't like any of you. Just fucking die, please.
Well, and the worst of it is that you already know that I felt that Monomi, the rabbit character from 2, was already intolerable. She was just, and then like Monofani is the one girl, Monocub is kind of just her part 2. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's essentially what she is. But like all of them are pretty intolerable except for, what is it? Monodam, yeah, he's about the only one that I was entertained by.
He ends up being like just his non-responsiveness when he takes over actually ends up working very well for creepiness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It does. And so Monodam is fun because at first he's just like expressionless, but over time he ends up actually becoming like this wicked character that's like killing everybody else off and taking mm-hmm. control and all this other stuff. And the one thing I do like about the Monocubs, which did not happen at all with Monomi and 2, was that they end up forming this whole separate plot line of all the Monocubs who are terribly intolerable. I hate all of them, but all of them, you know, ganging up on, like, having their interactions and doing whatever nonsense crap they were doing to fill time, but then also mm-hmm. revolting against Monokuma mm-hmm. and then taking over and then, like, ousting Monokuma And that whole part, when that happens, I was just like, oh my God, this is awesome. Because then Monokuma, the mute Monokuma, who has been like, you know, jacked up by his children, yeah, is like kind of helping you in part of the game and things like that. And I was just like, wow, this is actually really entertaining. And I did not think that that was going to happen at all. So yeah, that was kind of cool.
Also play but for then, good spooks.
Yeah. And then, of course, later on, Monokuma then comes back. He's like, I was on vacation, guys. Let me kill everybody. Dead, mm-hmm, you know. And like, yeah, that's how that works out. And that's why he's the best. But the best of the mascots, that's why he should be the only one.
yes.
But then, boy, was the part where two of the Mono Cubs decided that they were going to be in a romantic relationship together, did that happen before or after we found out that Kyo has a split personality or is possessed by his dead sister, who was also his lover and also was incestuous? Like, where did that fit in? Do you remember?
Kyo? I forget. Who?
Kyo is the anthropologist dude with the
mask on his face. Okay, Korikyo is how he's done.
Korikyo, yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Well, they shorten it when they're talking in the game, they shorten it to Kyo all the time.
Gotcha. So. Okay, sorry, I didn't recognize that. Yeah, yeah. I forget if it was before or after. I think their motivation was like, oh, people, the audience needs a romantic pair to care about this, so we're going to pair off, was like what they stated the reason to be, not understanding that that is, you know, bad and wrong.
Yeah, and so, like, boy, that was a thing. Like, when you find out that Kyo is the killer, and then, like, he has his talk and everything, and he, you know, he killed a couple of characters, one mm-hmm. because she came in when he was setting up for the other murder, and the other one just because, well, he set up for the murder already. He might as well commit it. And anyway, he needs to send all these girls to his dead sister so that she can have friends in the afterlife, and also,
shit, I forgot about this entirely. Does he do, like,
you forgot about all that?
He does, like, a full-on possession where his mask comes off and he like embodies her. He does like a like an Ashford brother and sister from fucking Code Veronica. I forgot about that. Yeah.
And I'm not 100% sure. Like, I think when they did the execution, they made it to where it really was like her spirit was hanging out with Monokuma, watching him or whatever. But like, for a lot of it, I wasn't sure if he just had a split personality or if he was actually possessed, but I think he mentions that he did some kind of a seance and then she just like occupied his body from there. Yeah. I don't know.
Okay. I forgot about that because that is just such an echo of Fukawa from the first game, the Genocide Jack or Genocide or Sayo.
Yeah.
Yeah. I completely forgot about that. So I don't know if that's related to when, what was it? Was it Mono Kid and Monophony who started dating each other or what?
Monotaro, the red one.
Okay. Yes. The bland assassin. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. No, it's.
Yeah. So that slipped my mind.
What'd you think of the sixth Mono Kid?
That entertained me sort of, but at the same time, like, of course.
Of course you're gonna bring nanomachines in.
Nanomachines. Well, I mean, like, if this is the future and there's all this other shit around, you know, we've got everybody in a spaceship that's going off.
Do they have to be little bears holding camcorders?
It makes sense. It's about the only way that they could actually make what they were doing with that work and then the last murder be unsolvable and all of that. Yeah, the only way they could have done that is with the nanomachine idea, but that was just, and it was kind of cool because they like alluded to it with Gonta saying, I see little tiny bugs. I see tiny bugs. And you know, like, everybody's like, what are you on? What are you smoking?
Well, just nobody pays attention to Gonta because it's a caveman.
Yeah. So, but no, he really did see some tiny bugs. I mean, like, they do some good foreshadowing for a lot of the stuff that they say at the very end of the game. But while you're playing the game up until that point, it's mostly just frustrating. Yes. So it's kind of weird because it makes it less fun to play when you're trying to deal with the stuff going up to that point. Mm-hmm. But I mean, even everybody being a trash character that is not likable is kind of makes sense because if they are all fans of the series that were put in here just to be killed so people, you know, could watch them die or whatever, then I mean, like, people don't want to see the people that they like dying. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, make everybody intolerable and sure, there you go.
Yeah.
So you just wait for the one that you hate to die. You know, I mean, I know I sure was like, when is Miyu going? When is Miyu going to die? Because it's got to be sometime in here.
She sticks around for a long time.
She does. She sure does. So, you know.
You mentioned that making the one case unsolvable because of the nanomachines kind of thing. I did like what they did with a few of these cases, specifically the one where you do not know who was killed and you do not know.
Yes. So, that's the same one that I'm talking about.
Okay, cool.
The nanomachines, because the reason why that was the fifth chapter,
right,
where Kaito and Kokichi both went missing, and somebody's in an ekisol in the class trial pretending to be both of them, and the other one is squished in a hydraulic press,
right,
and you don't know which one is which. Yeah. And the reason why that is unsolvable is because one of the EMP bombs was used right before the murder happened, mm-hmm, so that all the little nanokumas, right, you know, the other mono kid, were unable to see what was going on because, mm-hmm, they were short circuited by the, EMP. So why that was unsolvable. And that's why that was kind of interesting, because then like Monokuma jumps in and is in the middle of the trial as well. So
he just hops it. He hops up to somebody's podium and is like, all right, we need to figure this out because I can't be the judge of this if I don't know the actual answer.
And then he is like leaning on Shuichi to have him answer the questions at some point. He's like, okay, so Shuichi, what is it?
But that felt like a good, like, you know, just when you have one person who is in one of these mech suits, these exesols or ekisols, I forget, you said ekisol. Just see, okay, so we have no idea. Like, there are so many things that we don't know. It felt like a good follow up to Danganronpa 2, with Nagito's. With Kameida's quote murder, that was actually the most elaborate suicide to make everybody guilty.
And it was pretty cool, I think. And mm-hmm, like even what they did with Kokichi's character in the end, because like you don't know one way or the other who he is or whatever, because he's constantly lying and acting one way and then acting another, and sometimes, mm-hmm, he's crazy and sometimes he's cute and sometimes he's whatever. But like even at the end of the game, when Tsumugi is talking about it, and she's just like, "Oh no, he's not even, because was he even one of the ultimate one of the despair kids?" You know, I don't even know if he was one of the despair kids. I think he was just like a fanboy who wanted to be like that, because he was a leader of a crime organization that did petty mischief. Mm-hmm. He wasn't even like this badass that he was claiming that he was, that did all this negative stuff. And at one point he claimed that he was a cult leader, mm-hmm, from the Doomsday cult that was, you know, trying to foil the Gopher Project, and that he was the one who turned the spaceship with all the Gopher Project kids in it back to Earth. Which, by the way, why would they select specifically these dumb high schoolers to go and be the hope of humanity? But that's okay, because it's all a game show anyway. Yeah.
It's not supposed to make sense. It is literally supposed to be like a dumbass anime shonen fiction. So
yeah. So I mean, like, you know, but I got mad at that until I found out at the end of the game, and then I'm like, okay, well, they only did that so that way they could go ahead and lean into all the damn tropes. But still, they at least turned it on its head in some way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. But so I did like how they made his character kind of questionable all the way through. Mm-hmm. I also liked the way that Gonta, who is basically the purest boy because he was raised by animals and the wolves, mm-hmm, or in the wild or whatever, that he ends up being the one who he sees the truth first. He sees, mm-hmm, the truth of the outside world first, and then despairs so much that he just wants to kill everybody, mm-hmm, because he thinks it's better if they die rather than actually know the truth of what's going on. So he's going to be like the one to spare them, mm-hmm, from knowing, you know. And so that's pretty interesting, especially since like that happened in the virtual world and his actual self didn't even know. You know, didn't see the truth, mm-hmm, and didn't know. And he's just like, well, Virtual me said that that was the thing, so I guess it's the thing, and I guess I killed the person, and that's very sad.
So I'm gonna die now. I forget, what truth did he see? Did he see, oh, we're all in a television show? Or the truth that he saw was the fiction that the Earth is doomed because of meteors, and they're on a spaceship.
The Earth is, he saw the wasteland of the outside world. He basically saw what everybody saw when they went through that tunnel with the hammers and, you know, beat all the traps and then opened up the portal. Yeah. And when they got to the end of the Despair Road or whatever it was called, and then, you know, saw the Earth laid to waste and everything, essentially they saw the end of Danganronpa 1. So I don't know. What are some of the things that still stick with you since you haven't played this game in a while and you're only just now kind of refreshing your memory? Like, what has stuck with you over time?
Thinking about the game mechanically, I remember being enamored of the fact that you could lie. That it wasn't just about pointing out contradictions or like getting at people's, you know, like the weak spots or their misconceptions. It's like literally like, okay, I see this word. I can either say they're wrong or I can counter with my own incorrect thing to draw somebody out. I think that is an incredibly interesting thing that I kind of have been waiting for since like I played Phoenix Wright games for the first time. So I remember that being a really welcome addition to like the trial mechanics more broadly. It made you think around corners in a different way.
Well, another thing too is that in the sixth chapter, it is markedly different mechanically, since we're talking mechanics, because it is the only chapter that has a time limit. Like, basically, Kibo, his little antenna on the top of his head, which is basically a bit of hair, gets knocked off.
Well, it's literally antenna hair.
And that is his limiter, which basically keeps his power in check. And so he just goes berserk and starts destroying the academy, because if everything is wrecked, the killing game is over because there's nothing left. So so while he's doing that, you have a time limit to go and explore and try to do an investigation and figure out what you're going to do. And this whole section is not fun because there's a time limit. You have to run around. You have to investigate stuff. You have to go talk to people and then get their help so you can move rubble from the crumbling school and everything. And then the class trial is also not fun because you're basically at one point all you have are two options. Like when Kibo takes over, you've got hope and despair, and that's like the only answers you can give to anything. And then at some point you're supposed to completely abstain from doing anything. You're supposed to just wait for everything to end, and you're just sitting there like, I'm not going to vote one way or the other, because I'm going to, you know, basically the characters are protesting against all the viewers and the gamer and everybody by saying, I'm not going to do a damn thing. You want me to play this killing game? Well, I'm not going to vote one way or the other. I'm just going to sit here. And how about that?
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm going to put my foot down. So
it's not just about saving our lives. It's like, hey, this whole thing as an institution is, it sucks. So if I don't vote, you don't get to make a new one by the rules that you set out.
So they're peacefully protesting. And so it's an interesting concept. It's not fun to play. So the end of this game is not fun to play. It is interesting to see, but you know, that sure is a thing.
I can't name a single like adventure game that had like a timed section that was good.
Basically. But one thing that I found that was interesting that I have not actually engaged with, but now that I, like when I was doing a little bit of sprucing and researching a little bit before doing this episode, I noticed that there are a bunch of end game bonus modes. And I mean, the other games had this too, but there are a lot of them in this game.
Oh, wow.
So there's Love Across the Universe, which is the, you know, remember the casino where you get the keys of love? Well, you can give those keys of love. Like, basically, I guess in this mode is just the casino where you can purchase those keys and give them to people. And then you have a romantic scene in Hotel Kuma Sutra. And that's stupid. Okay, whatever. Yeah. Then there's the Card Death Machine, which is a card dispensing minigame where you collect cards that are used in some of the other stuff. Then you've got Ultimate Talent Development Plan, which is a alternate universe board game where nobody from any of the Danganronpa games has died, and they are all in the same school at the same time, going to school together.
Cool.
And so it's a board game where you move with dice rolls and stuff, and you play using the cards, and the cards get stronger, increasing their levels as you go through.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last form, the final form of the end game, is Despair Dungeon, Monokuma's Test, which is a dungeon crawler RPG that uses the collectible cards that you get from the card death machine and then power up in the board game version. And then in here, you go through a dungeon crawler and fight enemies and bosses in turn-based battles. And of course, the stronger cards that are leveled up through the board game, get further along than the ones that you just pull from the machine and go.
Oh, wow.
So there's a lot of extra stuff that I haven't even looked at because I was just like, I was done with the game and I'm like,
yeah, I'm only here for like the motion comic and like the logic puzzles. Yeah.
So like I completely refused to play the bonus mode in the second game. Mm-hmm. And then in the first game, I think I loaded it up and I just got so mad at the bonus mode for that one, like the school mode for that one, that I was just like, I can't even with this. I'm not going to, because I was trying to finish the game and I'm just, no, I'm not. Yeah. So I don't know if I'm going to play the end game stuff. I guess people will hear that on a regular level episode should that come to pass. No promises one way or the other on that though.
Yeah.
But,
are you gonna, I'll save that question for the end. So I've noticed like a distinct lack of, like table flipping in this. Like you've generally been, I mean, pretty positive about a lot of the stuff here, except for like the characters. Like what does it come down to that like frustrated you? Because like, I definitely saw you pulling select like groan quotes on Twitter. I'm not challenging whether or not you actually felt it, but like, I think a lot of people might listening to this might be surprised at like just how we're kind of admiring some of the little twists and how they handled stuff.
I have said it. I think I've said it on the show, but I know I've at least said it in the Hex Crank stream that I am developing antibodies to, like, you know, fight off the things that make me mad, I think, because remember a few years ago, I could not stand a JRPG for more than like 5 minutes.
Right, right.
And how many JRPGs have I finished since then? Actually,
more than me.
Like, I played. Oh my God, yeah. I have played some RPGs.
Yeah.
And when I started playing the visual novels with all the super hyper tropey stuff, I was so mad at everything.
Yeah.
Everything made me mad. And now I'm like, I'm playing them and I get mad at them, but I tolerate it because I know I'm sifting through and getting to the parts that I like. This one, it's kind of weird because the pacing and everything about the game itself was by and large not super fun to me, but it also wasn't the most intolerable time I've had either. Like, the characters were absolutely trash. I hated all the characters, but for some reason it didn't make me as mad as like the first half of Danganronpa 2, which to me was just completely intolerable. And I just wanted to beat my head into the wall. I was mad. I think it's because with that one, it's trying to be like a paradise island. And then there's Monomi like right in your face. And I'm just like, oh my God, I can't. And I hate all these characters. I can't. And then it was just doing all this stuff with Mikan and flashing everybody and all this. Yeah. And I'm like, oh no. And this one, it was just like just enough decent parts and then a whole lot of crappy parts, you know, with the characters, that is, just interspersed just enough to keep me on the tolerant edge, but like not teetering off into the I'm going to throw my Vita at the wall. So, you know, I didn't get mad enough to want to throw my Vita at any point during this game, which is interesting because both of the other two games made me want to throw my Vita. Now, like, when I was thinking about this leading up to this episode, I was like, okay, since I didn't get mad at this one, is this one like the one that I like best? And the answer
probably
is no.
Definitely not.
No, definitely not. It's interesting. The ending is interesting, but I liked the second half of Danganronpa 2 better, and I liked basically everything except the ending of 1 better.
Yeah.
Although the pacing in 1 is kind of like, you know, it doesn't pick up and get me into it quite the same way that the second half of 2 did.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I think it is probably the most solid of the games insofar as not having as many marks against it.
Has the best cast, and I think that stands most to its favor. Cast.
Yeah, it has the best cast. So even though the ending was frustrating to me, it still, you know, it didn't have the jerkiness of the pacing during the game, like all throughout all the different chapters of the game and the trials and everything leading up to it. And it kind of just progressed from being sort of slow in the beginning to just ramping up at a steady rate.
Yeah.
So, you know, it got to a point where I was really into it at one point.
Mm-hmm.
Danganronpa 2, it was just like all low, and it kept on getting lower, and it went down into the nadir of everything, and then it just started pulling up, and then it got to where it like ended on a higher note, where, I mean, there were some things that made me a little bit mad, but it ended a lot better than it began. Yeah. And this one, it was just kind of like I was mostly, you know, ambivalent or just irritated, mm-hmm. but I wasn't all out mad. I was just, and again, that's because it was like constantly a roller coaster of extremes. And I think it's just because they wrote everything so extreme. There was, you know, these parts where Monokuma is dropping like truth bombs, like legit philosophical truth bombs about reality that you can stop and reflect on and be mm-hmm. like, that was profound. Why is it in this game? And then here's like, you know, Miu trying to rape the robot. I mean, okay, well, I don't even know. Like,
yeah.
You know, so, yeah. You know, that or whatever, like all the weird incest stuff or whatever. And it's like, oh, well, yeah. I don't know. Like,
Are you bummed out that we're not going to learn? Okay, so this is prep. I was about to say something, and it's not true. My question was going to be, are you bummed out that we're not going to learn what happened after Danganronpa 2? Like, where that leads? That basically this is entirely outside of continuity. You're not mad that, like, this was not a continuation of that story?
No.
I was disappointed.
I was kind of figuring that I would see Makoto and his Men in Black show up again or something, and then they didn't, and I was like, okay, well, I mean, this one's trying to like go in a very different direction, though. So by the time I got to the end and I saw just how different a direction it was going in, I'm like, all right.
Okay.
Whatever. Yeah. Okay. But yeah, like I think Corpse Party Blood Drive broke my meter for what is bad. Because
it deranged you.
If I had played this game V3 before I had played Corpse Party Blood Drive, mm-hmm. I would have probably been raging so hardcore.
Probably. Yeah.
Corpse Party Blood Drive stole my soul and stomped on it. So that's what happened there. I mean, like that episode where I lost my mind and you had to like cut it and put it at the end of the episode so it wouldn't like completely disrupt the pacing. Like that was like the death of my soul and listeners can go back to whatever episode that was. It was a lot, and it made Dennis so mad, and he never gets mad, but he was so upset, and I was just like, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
You were watching my soul die at that moment. You were witnessing something very raw and real.
So when I said we're not going to learn what happens, like there is an actual Danganronpa 3. However, it's an anime, so you would have to watch it, and I've been tempted to like get a hold of it somehow and see, you know, just see how it goes, but it just I would rather play these as a game where I'm like figuring the cases out. I don't find like watching a courtroom scene necessarily as riveting as going through the debates and stuff. But
well, and then that's another thing I have to say about this game too, is that I have complained every game about the mini games, mm-hmm. but this one is the one where I feel like they actually got the mini games pretty right. Like I actually like the way that they play and they make sense, and they fix the closing arguments to where they are easier to navigate and they are not so opaque and just like
they don't take fucking forever.
So I mean, like the trials are still long as hell, and I think they're like too long. They probably could be cut by about a third and mm-hmm. still, you know, get everything in there and it would be fine. But the games themselves mechanically seemed to have smoothed out and been improved from all the various complaints that I had about it in 2. So
I generally agree with you. I think Psyche Taxi is a very dumb idea.
Oh, that one is definitely like that one's dumb. Like I cannot justify that being like, right. You know, a great example, a shining example of anything. And like if they were to take that back out, I would not be missing it whatsoever. Yeah, yeah. But it's also not hard. So right. It's OK. I mean, like it's tolerable. It's it's as tolerable as sitting through the bullshit of every other character in this game talking point. I mean, like that is one of the more innocuous things that goes on in this game. I'm not going to pick nits about that. So,
yeah.
I mean, we're talking about like, you know, incestuous robot bears and, all this other weird stuff that goes on in this game and nanomachine, you know,
we were talking about the minigames.
And then you're like, the Psyche Taxi. Okay,
no, in the grand scheme of things, it's not that dumb.
Yeah, on the scale of the mini games, that is definitely the bottom.
Right. But, right. but the other ones are like, you know, like the Hangman's Back, and they've just got like different kinds of debates that you do. Like they simulate people talking over each other really well.
That was improved a lot, I think, too. Yeah. So. And they also made it to where the power-ups that you can get help you if you struggle with, you know, those kinds of things. Like, oh, I'm supposed to clear out all of the text that's, you know, covering up the text that I'm supposed to hit and whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, there is a power-up you can get to help you with that. So if that is something that you struggle with, you can make it easier that way. And you can also change down the difficulty right before the class trial if you need to or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it helps facilitate it to where it's not so difficult for you to manage those mini games either. So if you don't like the mini games in the other games, they're far more user friendly in this version.
That's good.
So
do you think you're going to play Ultra Despair Girls? I mean, it's a serious question. I played it. It's not terrible.
I hate all of those characters. Are you sure you like every single one of the ones in that game? Are you sure you want to ask me about that? Well, I mean, wow.
I'm not gonna recommend you play it. I was curious if you were looking at more stuff in here. The only returning character is Toko.
Are you sure?
I think so.
That counts as 2, right?
Kinda, but her other half is a power up that you get. I was just gonna ask that because like of these games that you have demonstrated an appetite for before, you have this is the one that you haven't played, and like it's a kind of game that you like, you know, third person shooter, survival horror-y kind of thing.
So I played the original game. I bought that on my own. Listener sent me Danganronpa 2, which is why I continued to play them, because I was actually dead set that I wasn't going to play any more of Danganronpa after that ending. But I played 2 because somebody sent it to me. And I bought 3 on my own. However, I have been told by people who have played it that the Ultra Despair Girls is not really that good of a game. Like it's all right, but it's not like to the level of the current, you know, like the regular titled games. And if I'm already half mad at all of those games, then why would I play a less good one in the series that's a spin-off? I mean, like, okay, that's my bane. People send me things, and that's I play them when they send them to
me. Because they were nice. They sent you something.
They sent me something, and so like that's how it goes. That's how I've got it, you know. Uh-huh. I mean, if somebody wants to send it to me, I'll play it. I don't know if I'm going to buy it unless you know, very very cheap. But I mean, you know, that's a thing. I guess you can send me a copy if you really want to hear me talk about Ultra. I will play it if you send it sometime. It'll be on my roster with all the other games I've got.
I wouldn't recommend you bump it to the front of the line in any circumstance. But I was just curious.
Well, I mean, like, after I played Blood Drive, I thought I wasn't going to play anything ever after that. But then people are talking about Corpse Party 2, you know, and all this other stuff. And I'm like, maybe I will gonna play suck Dead you back Nation in. Sometime. And I'm like, you know,
damn it.
I think it's just like I wait for the wound to heal before I just open it back up again. Yeah. Thing.
Well, that way you don't get scars.
Yeah.
It never heals.
It never heals. So, yeah. But I mean, I have transformed into Jalakima by the power of the ultimate mastermind, the anonymous listener. So, I mean, anything is possible.
Nice. Yeah, no, my actual question, or my actual question would be if I was talking about what are you going to do next, do you have any intention to play Steins Gate Zero?
I have that game. It's on my backlog of stuff to play. Yeah. I will absolutely be playing that at some juncture.
Yeah.
It's not going to be right away.
I just need you to commit to playing it right now, actually, just publicly. the reason that came to mind is because I just saw on, I think, Axis's site or whatever publisher did that, maybe NIS, that they put out another Steins Gate game that is like specifically a dating sim with all the lab girls. It's like, man, I feel pretty good skipping that, actually.
Oh, yeah. Boy, yeah. No.
It's like Steins Gate and My Darling's Embrace or something like that. And I was like, there's probably somebody out there who's really happy that exists. But
that would be one of those games where it's like, all right, I am not in the habit of just imbibing. But like, that would be a thing where it's like, I'm just going to, you know, like that would be a thing I would have to stream and I would have to drink when I'm playing.
Right.
Oh my God, guys.
It'd be self-destructive for all involved.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be definitely self-destructive. So.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. We will see if I go back to these extra modes in V3. Mm-hmm. There are those modes. I like a dungeon crawler, yeah. But it's past all this other shit that you've got to do to get to the point where you're built up for the dungeon crawler. So
I don't know.
That's a lot of grinding. That sounds like a lot of grinding, and you know I don't like grinding. So
I mean, you've said that in the past, but then you go play all these JRPGs.
I stopped playing 12, didn't I? And that one's not even particularly grindy. It doesn't feel like because you can put everything on auto. So yeah. I will get back to that sometime.
No hurry.
Anyway, in the meantime, you know, I'm processing.
Yeah. I don't know that I have any other thoughts on Danganronpa V3.
This is probably about as much as I've got off the top of my head. Of course, once we're done recording, all of a sudden it'll be like, and then I had a thought. I will tweet it out if I have any more thoughts, and listeners can go read my angry Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, thanks for hopping on, Jala. This was fun to talk about. It was fun to go back and revisit the series, even just in wiki form to refresh my memory.
Yeah, it's definitely something that I felt frustrated that I could not talk about with any great detail on the regular show, because mm-hmm. it's like there are people in, you know, other listeners and other hosts that are, you know, Dennis might eventually maybe finish playing one and then play the last one. And like, I don't want to ruin it for him or like some of the listeners who actually play these or are in the middle of them, because there are several people in the middle of them right now.
Yeah. Spoiler cast can be their own episode. Like, yeah, it requires a special consideration, but we have the time, we have the ability to do it. So I'm happy we did.
Yeah. Well, maybe some will have to both play Corpse Party 2.
Yeah, no, I just, who knows, maybe that needs to come to Switch, but then like Corpse Party 2, like they said it was a reboot kind of thing or a new start, but then they've got other stuff like that's got continuity with Bloodline or Blood Drive.
It's not a new start because they start out with what's her name is the main character, the same girl from the last one,
right.
So
oh well,
yeah, you know, that girl.
we'll see what happens.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. But yeah, this definitely has been a thing. Cool. But yeah, I am now going to go and cuddle with my Monokuma plush, who is thankfully not one of the Mono Cubs.
Yes, thankfully. Thankfully, he's the good one.
Oh, yeah. Oh man, I don't know. Did I mention my hatred of the dub of this? Oh my god.
We talked about it a little bit toward the beginning. I think that just to lay stuff out that you had played the Japanese, like the actual Japanese voice acting.
I've come full circle. I'm back to that again. Oh boy. Wow. Just, I don't play these on a dub, and I'm so glad. Okay. Don't play it on a dub. And if you did, I don't know how you got through it.
I mean, I
you
did.
You are a braver person. Oh God.
Yeah. It's,
I don't wow. know. Okay. Well, yeah. Cole. All right.
It's fine. It's fine. It was about what I expected it to be, you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. They're all supposed to be hateful anyway and hateable.
Exactly. Cool. Well, I think that's all we got.
Yep, that's a wrap.
All right.
Sounds good to me.
Thank you everybody for listening. And I don't know, let us know if you like this. Always like hearing
Yahoo,
that.
For sure.
Bye-bye.
Bye, come on.